Brady Saar, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services, Erskine. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network, CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Monday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Tyler Donaldson, along with Jamie Dickerman. And we begin with Harvest Hotline. Harvest Hotline sponsored by Ag Country Farm Credit Services, Amity Technology, the North Dakota Mill, and U.S. Custom Harvesters. Cold weather is just what Red River Valley sugar beet growers have been waiting for. Red River Valley Sugar Beet Growers Association Executive Director Harrison Weber says harvest conditions are finally lining up for a full push across the region.
Tonight, Monday at 8 p.m., the stockpile harvest is going to commence, and so we're going to start running 24 hours a day, certainly over the weekend up north, kind of, you know, I'd say north, especially northwest of Grand Forks, pretty moist, and then up by the Canadian border there, the radar was kind of going kitty corner, but going to be kind of hit and miss in the northern part, especially the Drayton District. And guys will be going where they can, but the rest of the valley is going to be rocking and rolling here starting at 8 p.m. tonight, and we're gonna go until we either get shut down for heat, cold, or rain, and we're not stopping until something else stops us. So,
Weber says with harvest in full swing, drivers across the valley should expect a major increase in truck traffic.
We're going to have an extra, you know, probably around 3,000 trucks on the road, and we'll dump 50,000 truckloads every day, and just a lot of truck activity up and down the valley. And so tomorrow morning when everybody wakes up to go to school or work, there's going to be a lot of trucks out there that you weren't, you know, didn't see on the night before, and we're already going to be moving. And so truck drivers got to slow down, and the public just give us a be a little patient with us. We're going to do our best, and we'll be out of everybody's hair, and hopefully as little as 10, 12 days here.
Harvest moving quickly across eastern North Dakota. Pioneer Field agronomist Eric Lange says last week's warm, dry conditions really helped farmers make big progress.
Yeah, in my area here in eastern North Dakota, last week we saw phenomenal harvest conditions outside of a couple of windy days there. Eastern Red River Valley, we saw over 140 GDUs, which this time of year is unheard of, but majority of eastern part of the state picked up around 120 GDUs, which is phenomenal for drying down that corn as we're getting the rest of this bean crop off.
Lange says soybean yields have been highly variable this fall, depending on how much damage each field took from summer storms.
Some soybean fields that were unaffected by some of this severe weather kind of dodged some of that. We're seeing yields up in the 50s, even, you know, some areas of fields up into the 60s and stuff. But, you know, field averages, I would say, you know, are kind of falling in trend line with where guys are, you know, typically at there for APH levels. But definitely plenty of below average areas due to the amount of severe weather that we had this year, though, for sure.
5L Custom Harvesting just finished up soybean harvest in Harold, South Dakota. Owner Josh Lennox says it was a good crop.
Our average was 65, really good. We've been begging for rain to get a little break. It is. We've missed all the rain. It's cooler this morning, but no, we have not stopped due to the weather. Cut some wet corn and hauled to the dairy, and we've done soybeans here. Now we're waiting on the corn to dry out.
Lennox says that waiting on the corn to dry down before they can get started.
The corn that we did cut average 175 here for Harold, so we're pretty stoked about it. We're probably middle of this week we'll try a field. We tried it yesterday. It was 15. We're going to try to get it down. So probably middle of this coming week.
Harvest wrapping up for soybeans, just beginning for corn and sunflowers in south central North Dakota. Solon area farmer Kenny Schmidt says frost has been a factor, but overall yields are holding up.
We froze last night, got down to 29, and so we're going to get into our corn and flowers here very shortly. And the beans are about done. That harvest was, I think, pretty good. And where we got some frost early September, it hurt a little bit, but I think the early corn looks like the test weights are pretty good and the yield is damn decent.
Schmidt says soybean yields have been very good across the area, helped by late season rains.
Well, the beans were good, and anybody that had beans in the area, they were good. That was a good crop because what ruined the wheat in August, the rains, made the beans.
Schmidt says the next challenge will be storage, with bins already full and more corn coming in from the field. That's Harvest Hotline, brought to you by Ag Country Farm Credit Services, Amity Technology, North Dakota Mill, and U.S. Custom Harvesters.
It's National 4-H Week, and the Red River Farm Network's highlighting ag professionals and students that have had their lives impacted by 4-H. Cass County, North Dakota Ag and Natural Resource Extension agent Lily Bina grew up in both agriculture and 4-H present in her life since a young age.
I grew up in 4-H my whole entire life. I grew up on a seed farm by Lincoln, North Dakota in Walsh County, so agriculture was kind of the center of my life my whole life. And actually the first activity I did in 4-H was crop judging. It's now called agronomy judging. But yeah, that's what I started. I think I was probably 9 years old, and I was learning crop seeds and weed seeds, and then I went on to show chickens at the fair that year.
Bina credits 4-H for getting her to where she is today.
I give 4-H a lot of credit to where I am today. I'm currently an extension agent, and 4-H is part of my job. So I give it a lot of credit for, one, learning how to fail, but learning how to fail in a constructive environment. My communication skills, I think I learned from 4-H. And really just, I met so many people throughout it, too, that it's given me such a wide network.
The Red River Farm Network salute to National 4-H Week is sponsored by Ag Country Farm Credit Services, Associated Milk Producers and its Dinner Bell Creamery, and by the Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation.
Cool temperatures expected again for tomorrow morning, with lows dipping into the 30s, even below freezing in some areas. Frost could form across eastern North Dakota and the Northern Valley under clear skies. Any frost will melt by midday as sunshine returns, highs back up around 60. By midweek, a warm air mass will move in from the south, bringing gusty winds and a rise in temperatures. Highs will reach the upper 60s to low 70s Wednesday through Friday, with mostly sunny skies. The weekend bringing another chance of scattered rain, with highs in the 70s before cooler 60-degree weather returns early next week. This is the Red River Farm Network.
Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. World Weather Incorporated reports weekend rainfall brought the most moisture to central and western North Dakota, western South Dakota, parts of Nebraska, Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho. Totals generally ranged from a half inch to just over an inch, with heavier amounts reported at Bismarck and Garrison, North Dakota. Much of the U.S. hard red winter wheat region stayed dry, although light showers fell in Nebraska and Colorado. Rain is expected early this week from Kansas through the upper Midwest and in the Ohio River Valley into the Delta and Southeast, with some locations receiving more than 2 inches. Frosts and freezes will end the growing season in parts of the northern plains and upper Midwest, but overall impacts expected to be low.
World Weather says rainfall over the weekend brought significant moisture to Argentina, with the heaviest amounts from Cordoba to Buenos Aires. Some areas in north-central Buenos Aires saw more than 2.5 inches, while the southwest and northern regions stay mostly dry. This week expected to be drier in Argentina, aiding field work and crop development, with more rain possible next week to help drier areas. In Brazil, limited rain will fall across central and northern crop regions before conditions turn wetter next week, supporting soybean planting. Southern Brazil remaining favorably moist after recent rainfall.
The federal government shutdown could have major financial consequences for farmers the longer it drags on. Farm management analyst Kent Tesey says producers who rely on federal programs and payments could face cash flow challenges if the shutdown lasts for weeks or months.
Since 1976, we've had 21 government shutdowns. Most of those only lasted a few days, and most people didn't hardly notice it. But the last one we had was in the first Trump administration, late 18 and early 19, lasted 34 days. And certainly if we get one that extends weeks or months, that could start to have some impact for farmers. First of all, they're counting on many farmers in the upper Midwest, counting on some ARC County payments to come here in October, especially in southern and central Minnesota, some pretty significant payments.
TC says the shutdown could also stall farm loans and delay key USDA reports that impact commodity markets.
This week, we were supposed to get a couple very important USDA reports on October 9th, monthly crop report and the world supply and demand report, and both of those reports will either be delayed or probably eliminated. The last shutdown they actually eliminated those reports in January of 2019. And certainly a lot of attention on that now with our low market prices. I think there was some hope that USDA might adjust the national corn and soybean yields lower in this report, which could be a positive for the low grain markets we have.
TC says the longer the shutdown lasts, the more financial pressure it will put on farmers who depend on federal programs for income and operating loans.
With the government shutdown in full effect, there won't be any export sales reports until Congress can pass a budget resolution. However, we can still look at the estimates this week for a rough idea of what the sales might look like. Allendale commodity broker Greg McBride talked about this week's estimates for both corn and soybeans.
Yeah, on corn, the estimate came in at 1.2 million to 2 million tons. You had the bean number come in somewhere between 300 and 1.6 million. The beans effectively are just kind of limping along here, whereas the corn is just, it's far and away the best thing we've got to talk about when it comes to exports. The problem is now with the government shutdown, we don't really know. I mean, we know they're good, but we're not getting any additional information to help us know exactly how good they are.
Navigating the marketplace will be difficult for the time being, but McBride said there's one thing we know for sure. The prices will be very volatile.
Volatility is the right word for it. You know, the overall sentiment just from what we had from Tuesday's report on the corn side of things should have been bearish. You know, adding about 200 million bushels to last year's final number effectively adds 200 million bushels to the new crop number. Even though we will see maybe some yield adjustments or maybe an export number adjustment. The problem is we don't have the USDA for right now, so we're kind of flying blind on that.
You can hear the latest farm news, weather, and podcasts anytime. Listen on rrfn.com or most anywhere you get your podcasts. This is the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. The U.S. dairy sector has not seen its usual holiday season boost in butter demand. Everdot Ag Producer Division President Mike North says production has outpaced demand.
Absolutely. This is a trend we've been watching for years. The last five especially, that trend towards more butterfat and protein in milk has really taken off. Management, of course, feeding, genetics has played a big role, and we don't see that slowing down anytime quick. And so that pounds of solids per hundredweight of milk continues to grow and makes us more productive as we've been adding more cows. And so, you know, as you look at this trend, we've been able to continue to make more and more product, and exports have been record, which has been a fantastic story, but our domestic demand has been lackluster at best.
North says exports have been strong, but without them, the market would be in a difficult position.
Because of production of components and because of some of that softer domestic demand, it has weighed on prices. And you have, as you pointed out with butter, watched prices deteriorate back to levels in butter we haven't seen since 2021 as we were picking up the pieces from COVID. And, you know, we're looking at $1.60 price there, $1.60 price on cheese. That's not the kind of market that warrants a $20 milk check. And so, you know, the components probably aren't going away anytime quick.
North adds that global demand for protein and butterfat should eventually catch up with production, helping markets to rebound. Checking quotes, December wheat Minneapolis is 2.5 lower to 557.25. March Minneapolis 2.25 lower as well. December wheat Chicago 1.75 lower at 513.5. KC December hard red winter wheat's down 2 cents to 495. December corn's up a penny and 3/4 to 420.75. March corn a penny and 1/4 higher. July corn is just above even 0.25 higher. November soybeans 0.25 higher as well, 10.18.25. In Winnipeg, November canola's $4.30 per metric ton higher to 609.30 Canadian. On the cattle side, October live cattle are up $1.27 to 232.30. December live cattle are 2.27 higher. February live cattle are up 292. October feeders are up 515 to 362.32. November feeders 572 higher. January feeders are up 587. October hogs 65 cents lower, 98.32. This is the Red River Farm Network.